Thank you, Lynn. You okay, Jamie? Jamie's over there crying. You okay? Maybe she was having a nightmare. She's okay, I think, Danielle. She's just laying on the blue sofa. So hey, everyone. Happy Sunday evening. And yes, it is very nice to be back. I think I missed a couple of Sundays while I was away in Costa Rica. But we did have a wonderful retreat in Costa Rica. And at the first member meeting in April, so that would be the, I don't know what the date is. Oh, hold on, let me peek real quick. April 6th, Sunday, April 6th. I'm going to invite the ladies who were at the retreat. We'll see if they come. But I'm going to invite them to come and share from their perspective what occurred at the retreat and share how they brought that back home and what's happening at home. So that'll be a part of what we look at the very first member meeting, or I guess it's the only member meeting, but it's the very first Sunday in April. But it really was a wonderful retreat. There's something about getting away into a totally different environment, especially an environment where, you know, you really don't have Wi-Fi, you don't have the internet access, you can't be running and checking Facebook and checking email all the time. We have one computer that we shared, and we really only used it a couple hours a day, and we took turns just to deal with the most urgent matters. But for the most part, we weren't using computers. And we did a lot of things that people do not normally do in their daily life, which I think is really, really helpful to get outside of your routines. We also spent mornings in discussion sessions and late afternoon or evenings in discussion sessions. So, you know, there was discussion and teaching, then activity. And then discussion and teaching. And then typically everybody retired to their rooms after the evening discussion. So I'll share more, and hopefully the ladies will come and we'll all share more on April 6th. But it was really a very, very helpful retreat, I think, for everyone involved. And the next retreat that's going to have that similar flavor will be the Santa Barbara Soak in the Beauty Retreat, which is following the Santa Barbara Satsang Retreat. Those are in September. Right now I'm here to share from my Seven Steps journal. I started sharing a few weeks ago from step 3. And tonight, let me see what I have here. I already have the link. Hold on, let me post it. Yeah, tonight we're going to start with 534. So I've posted the link in the room if anybody wants to read along in my journal with me. If you're listening on the radio, what you can do is go to RDA7, that is the digit 7, it's not spelled out, RDA7stepsjournal.wordpress.com. And when you get there, you'll notice up on the menu bar that you can choose step 3. And then you'll want to choose the numbering sequence that will allow you to find your way to 534, because that's where we're starting tonight. And online, that is my personal journal. That's what I wrote after contemplating the quote that's in the Seven Steps to Awakening. Right now, the quotes I'm reading in the Seven Steps to Awakening are quotes that are supposed to help expose the ego, or expose the false self, or the imposter self, as it says in the objective, and to also expose how it perpetuates its imaginary self, all illusion and suffering. Again, these quotes are to help expose how the ego perpetuates its imaginary self, all illusion and suffering. And the first set of quotes in step 3 are attributed to Ramana Maharshi. They are Ramana Maharshi's teachings, but the words themselves really aren't. The words themselves come from Muru Ganar. Muru Ganar was a poet and a realized devotee of Ramana Maharshi. And he took Ramana's teachings and put them in this lovely book. It's one of my favorite books. It's called Garland of Guru's Sayings. I love that book so much. Garland of Guru's Sayings. And Ramana Maharshi did read Muruganar's work and you know, approved it. So Ramana Maharshi agreed these were his teachings, but the poetic voice of Muruganar is just beautiful. And so the quotes that I'm reading now actually come from Muruganar's book. That's where these quotes come from. I'm starting with quote number 534 in the Seven Steps to Awakening. And before I do that, I think I'm going to do two things. I'm going to have a sip of tea and then have a sip of silence. So you may not have tea, but you can join me in the silence. So let's have a couple sips and then we'll begin. First, the tea. And now the silence. Amen. All right, so we're going to begin with number 534, and this is what it says in the Seven Steps to Awakening. The false dream ends when we wake up. Even so, the ego dies when the sun, S-U-N, the true I, rises. Ego's destruction by strong self-inquiry is what is known as self-attainment. Again, number 534. The false dream ends when we wake up. Even so, the ego dies when the sun, the true I, rises. Ego's destruction by strong self-inquiry is what is known as self-attainment. One thing I love about these quotes is I really perceive them to be so clear and so right on. You know, there are so many rumors that seem to go about in the spiritual community. And, you know, one of those rumors, and I'm sure everybody hears from time to time, is that the ego never really goes away, that the ego never really dies, that you can realize self and have an ego too. And, you know, there are certain teachings that I hear in the general community where there's something in me, I call it discernment, but there's something in me that always just very gently will tell me no. There are also teachings where it will very willingly tell me yes. You know, it's a little guidance system within. And I've always been grateful to have this guidance system because, well, because I don't feel that I get as confused as some friends do. You know, some friends hear all these different spiritual teachings and they don't seem to feel, or maybe they ignore their own intuition. Maybe they're not trusting their own intuition. But they're not as sure about which teachings to believe or accept as true and which teachings not to. But for me, it seems from the very beginning there's been this pretty clear yes and no. And one thing that I've always gotten a no around is the statement that, you know, you never really get rid of the ego, or the statement that the ego's always here. I've always had a firm but quiet no. There's always been a sense in me that there is a silence that is so profound. It is completely beyond the ego. Remember, the ego is something that has a beginning, and anything that has a beginning can also have an end. But the reality is that which has no beginning and has no end. You know, to say that we can never get back to the direct experience of reality without ego to me is crazy. Now, I can say, I have not yet got that experience. That's honesty. I can say my current experience is that I experience a lot of clarity, and I know that it's genuine clarity, and I experience ego. And I can also say that in most cases, not in all, but in most cases, I just see ego as meaningless chatter, and I'm able to not pay attention to it. So in that way, it has no effect the majority of the time. Occasionally, I slip a little bit. Usually, I don't slip for long. Usually, a little slip is then seen. It's felt because it feels different, right? It's not that joy that I've become accustomed to, and then I can correct myself. But I can say that my current experience is that the ego is still present. This is also why I do not call myself awake. To me, awake is what this quote says. Awake is the destruction of the ego. There is no ego. The end of the ego. And I love these quotes that are in the Seven Steps to Awakening because I don't hear any confusion in any of these quotes. They are all perfectly pointing to a real reality that is entirely beyond ego, entirely beyond an illusion of the world, entirely beyond the illusion of a false self, the illusion of an individual mind. And I also feel that these quotes, by contemplating them, they keep me very, very honest. I would be lying to you if I said that I never felt the temptation to fall for the belief that I'm enlightened. I have felt that temptation. I have felt that pull. I know what it is, and I know why some people fall for it. I do get that. I've felt its energy. It has a very strong pull. But it's not real. And I don't want anything that's not real. That's one of the things I loved about Bob Ferguson in the room here a couple of weeks ago. You know, he was very clear that his teacher also taught that there's a mind trick that some people believe is enlightenment, but it's still mind. This is something I've always known. I've always known that that was possible. I call it false enlightenment. And it's always been my purpose not to go down that road. And there are, you know, I won't tell you right now because I don't feel to, but I could tell you that there are certain teachings that when I spend a little too much time with those teachings or with those teachers, there was a temptation to go down that road of I'm enlightened because those teachers seem to be asking everyone to just declare that. And in fact, the time that I feel I had the greatest temptation to slip into that would have been in the fall of 2011. I feel I was just on the edge of declaring myself enlightened. And that's when the guidance came to start the Seven Steps to Awakening. I am so grateful to my inner guidance. I am so grateful because it knew I needed to be saved from that trick. And it gave me this book of extremely clear quotes to bring me back. Again, quote number 534. The false dream ends when we wake up. Even so, the ego dies when the sun, the true I, rises. Ego's destruction by strong self-inquiry is what is known as self-attainment. Ego's destruction equals self-attainment. Isn't that clear? And aren't we grateful for clarity? Now, let's see. Let's go look at my journal. My journal, this is from July 23rd, 2012. That's the day that I contemplated this quote and wrote this journal entry. And it says, one is focused on the dream of self-body world, or one is not. The first leads to the continuation of the belief in illusion. The second detaches from that belief and opens up to realization of true self. One is focused on the dream of self-body world, or one is not. It's interesting because, you know, we live in the dream until we don't. I know of no way to avoid living in the dream right now. By that I mean I know of no way to not be, you know, Ron's girlfriend, Jasmine's mother, Jamie's master, president of Awakening Together, my mother's daughter. But what has happened is I don't see any of those things as me. None of them. I see them as roles that are perceived and that I do feel, and I do feel to play. I don't feel to walk away from any of those roles. I feel like those roles are a part of my role, my job, my function. But I don't feel that when I'm performing those roles, playing those roles, that my focus should be on the role or that my focus should be on the world. I don't feel, for example, that it's my job to worry about my daughter. I don't feel, for example, that it's my job to try and manipulate my boyfriend in order to make me happy in some way. I don't feel that it's my job to try and control the direction of Awakening Together. I don't feel it's my job to really, at the mental level, be involved in the world at all, even though at the physical level that's happening. I feel like it's my job to let go of everything I'm doing, even as I'm doing it. I feel like it's my job to focus on what I've come to call my spiritual aspiration, all of the time, no matter what I appear to be doing. You know, this week I'm going on family vacation because the family wants to. And again, that's my role. So if they had decided not to go, that would have been wonderful. They decided to go, so that's wonderful too. So I'm going on family vacation. And there was a time when I lived for vacations. And I can look back at that now and I can see why that was true. It actually makes a lot of sense. You see, when I was in my daily life with my work and my mother role and my girlfriend role, and I believed all of them fully, I was trying to control and manipulate and make things happen a certain way. So there was a lot of stress always, you know, trying to control the world. And when I went on vacation, I let go of that for a while. And when I went on vacation, I was just here now. I wasn't ever trying to control anything on vacation. So I can see why I used to live for my vacations, right? Because really what I wanted was that here now just being experience. But I only allowed myself to have that here now just being experience on vacation. So, and I used to go on vacation about every 2 months. I had a good jobs that gave a lot of vacation, and I took advantage of it. And as soon as one vacation ended, I began planning the next vacation because vacation was my happiness. Now, although I'm very happy to go on vacation with them because that's what they want, now it's completely different. It doesn't matter to me whether I am on vacation or whether I am here working. It's completely irrelevant because I've learned to be here now all the time. Now again, what we're looking at is my journal entry from July 23rd on number 534. And my journal entry says, one is focused on the dream of self, body, world, or one is not. So, if I'm able to just be here now, doing what's in front of me to do, without any attachment, without any need to control, without any need to manipulate, focused on my purpose always in my mind, mentally with my purpose, mentally contemplating the contemplation of the day, mentally remembering. It's funny how I remember. I noticed that today, how I remember. It's the first time I noticed it. Maybe I'll talk about that in a moment. But remembering whatever my current lesson is, if that's where my mind is, even though my body seems to be doing a lot of things, then I'm not really focused on the dream of self, body, world. My mind isn't there. I'm focused on awakening. That's where my heart is. That's where my treasure lies. That's what this life is about now. One is focused on the dream of self, body, world, or one is not. The first leads to continuation of the belief in illusion. So the first strengthens the ego sense, right? The sense of me, the sense of I. The first really attaches me, the first being focused on the world, right? Body. Let's see, what was it? Focused on the self, body, world. The first really makes me feel very much like I am Regina. This is my life. It needs to be a certain way in order for me to be happy. If I'm focused on self, body, world, that attachment is very, very strong. One is focused on the dream of self, body, world, or one is not. The first leads to the continuation of the belief in illusion. The second, not being attached to self, body, world, the second detaches from that belief and opens up to realization of true self. You know, somebody said, and I think Bob Ferguson quoted the somebody, I think that's where I recently heard it again, but I had heard it before. Somebody said something like, forgive me if my quoting is not perfect, but I think the idea is, somebody said something like, awakening is an accident, right? You can't make it happen, but you can ready yourself for the accident or make yourself more accident prone. Maybe that was it. Awakening is an accident. You can't make it happen, but you can make yourself more accident prone. Something like that. That's what I feel my job is. That's what I feel my job is. That's where I feel my mind needs to be all of the time, no matter what this body appears to be doing. And a great word for me is open. Just open, to be open. You know, it seems like if I'm open, then I can invite the experience of awakening. It seems like if I am somehow closed, that I'm saying, no, not now, pass me by, right? Pass me by. So being open, available, empty, those things feel very, very good to me. Very, very good to me. And notice this says again, the second, which is not being focused on self, body, world, detaches from the belief in illusion, and opens up to realization of true self. So when I'm doing whatever I'm doing, but I'm mentally focused on being available, being detached, being open, I'm just being accident prone. All right, that's all I have to say about 534. Funny how it just ends like that, isn't it? Okay, so if you are in with me in the journal and you want to continue, you can scroll down underneath the comment and reply area and click on number 535. And Lynn has given you the link to 535 if you're not in the journal and you would like to be. That will take you there. I am going to read 535 from the Seven Steps to Awakening. Only for those free from all sense of doership, the bliss of tranquil peace shines pure within. For the ego proud is the sole evil seed whence spring all known calamities. Oh my God, I love this quote. I love this quote. Let me read it again. Listen, if you have to, listen with your eyes closed. Only for those free from all sense of doership, the bliss of tranquil peace shines pure within. For the ego proud is the sole evil seed whence spring all known calamities. So again, the cause of all calamities, as this is saying, is the ego. But what this is also saying is that the ego is that sense of doership or that sense of I. I am the mother of Jasmine. I am the girlfriend of Ron. I am the president of Awakening Together. I am the master of Jamie. I am the daughter of Anita and Dawn, right? I am getting this done. You know, I do a lot. I do a lot. But the funny thing is, I don't feel, it doesn't make any sense, but I don't feel as if I do anything. You know, like I never felt like I wrote NTI. Even though I know that the pen was in my hand. But I've never called NTI my book. Same thing with the teachings of Inner Ramana. Somehow it came, and somehow, you know, the ink came from this hand, right? But I never felt like I did anything. And it's the same thing with Awakening Together. You know, Awakening Together is just blossoming. And I keep very, very busy, you know, doing the part of that blossoming that I need to do. And at the same time, I don't feel like I do anything. I would never in my chest feel like I made such and such a thing happen. Like that feeling is not there. I know that feeling because I used to have that feeling. I used to be, the director of a training department for a corporate company. And my training department was very successful. We won national awards and, you know, people just loved what we did. And then I remember I felt like I lead these people. And I even remember my boss telling me, you know, you say I too much. Even my boss then would tell me, you say I too much. You should say we more. And I remember my thought when she said that, you say I too much. You should say we more. I'm like, but I did it. That was my belief, but I did it. So I know that puffed up feeling of I did it. I do. I know it well. And I don't have that now. It doesn't exist in me. I feel like I don't do it. I feel like it happens and it happens through this body, but there's no feeling that I do it. The ideas that come to me, there's no feeling that I came up with those ideas. They just came in through this brain. And And again, I'm not awake. But what we're hearing is that there's a, apparently has been a clear willingness to let go of that sense of doership. I'll tell you where I think the sense of doership began to really die. I mean, it died somewhat before because, like I said, I never felt like I wrote NTI. I never felt like I decided to be with Laurent. I never felt like I decided not to be with Laurent. You know, I just felt like all of those things happened. But when the real sense of doership began to die is when I began to practice the teachings of Inner Ramana. You know, in one of the teachings of Inner Ramana, one of the practices is that surrender. You know, where you ask, what am I to do now? How am I to see this? What am I to think? How am I to respond? And what that practice does is that tunes you into your intuition that is not your thinking mind. And at some point you quit asking the questions because at some point you just feel the intuition. You really get a clear indication. I mean, you know the difference between that intuition that moves you and that thinking mind, and you just learn not to give any attention to the thinking mind and just to follow that intuition everywhere. So you do tune into it to the point where you no longer even have to ask. You just live on intuition. But it's that living on intuition that leads to the feeling of I don't do anything. Even though there's a lot of movement, a lot of activity, lots of wonderful ideas that come through, you know, lots of clarity comes through. Lots of clarity comes through when I'm teaching. Lots of clarity comes through when I'm writing the MPP. But I don't feel like any of it is me doing it. It's coming through. I'm the empty vessel. Right? What was Mother Teresa said? I'm a pencil in the hand of God. Right? A pencil doesn't do anything. So again, this quote, number 535, only for those free from all sense of doership, the bliss of tranquil peace shines pure within. For the ego proud is the sole evil seed whence spring all known calamities. And again, the ego and the doer are linked here. They're the same. You can't feel like I am doing this and be egoless. They don't go together. The I am doing this thought is a part of the ego thought system. Now, let's go and look at my journal, number 535. Again, this was written on July 26th. The belief in I is the sole error to be released. I think, I choose, and I'm awakening. This I is the error. Watch it, notice it, see it. One thing that I have come to realize is that, the ego thrives in darkness, and darkness is the equivalent of us not watching, us not noticing, us not paying attention. Whenever we start to truly pay attention to something, whenever we start to truly see it, that's the beginning of the end of that, because the ego cannot thrive in the light of our awareness. So related to this quote, one thing that I want to give my willingness to is I want to give my willingness to see when I think I'm doing it, whether that's I think I'm making a awakening together be what it is. I laughed because that's so arrogant, it's ridiculous, but still. I could have that thought. If I think I'm making awakening together be what it is, or if I think I'm choosing what to cook for dinner. You know, I don't even feel like I choose what to cook for dinner. I feel like what to cook for dinner arises in me. It arises, and then I know. Before I know, I don't. Before it arises, I don't know. After it arises, I do know. But I don't feel like I make the decision, right? But I want to notice if I am doing that. I don't want to hide and not look at it. Yeah, who I go to bed with is none of my business. I think those words came out of my mouth once. And that doesn't mean that I'm sleeping around. It just means that I let spirit choose who my current partner is. For a time it was Ron, then for a time it was Laurent, and now it's Ron again. And I don't get involved with should I stay or should I go. I just be with who is given. But as I was saying, we want to start noticing if I feel that I'm doing something or I feel that I'm choosing, I feel I'm making decisions. We want to pay attention to that to whatever degree it's there, whether it's there a lot or whether it's only still there a little. We want to bring our awareness to it and really just see it. That's all we really have to do. We see it and we go, ah, look, there's that belief in I. Ah, there it is again. There's that belief in I. And somehow, you know, this is the miracle, right? Somehow, as we just bring our awareness to it, it begins to weaken. I will tell you a secret. It's not really that much of a secret. Ego would like it to be a secret. There is a thought that will keep us from looking. I perceive it to be the most dangerous thought in the ego thought system. It's the thought that will not allow us to be self-honest. It's the thought that leads us to denial, leads us to lie to ourselves. I call it the I am bad thought. A Course in Miracles calls it guilt. NTI calls it unworthiness. Bentino Massaro and Adyashanti, I've seen them both call it lack. Lack because it's that feeling I will never be enough. But it's all the same thought, whether we call it lack, guilt, unworthiness, I am bad, shame, original sin. Thank you, Teddy. Right? It's the same, no matter what name you put on it. And the funny thing about this thought is until it's healed, until it's let go, until it's seen through, everyone has it, everyone. And yet, it's telling you that you're the only one. It's telling you that you personally are the one that is bad. You personally are the guilty one or the unworthy one or the sinful one. You personally. And that's a lie. The thought is present, but the thought is very impersonal. And the reason I say it's impersonal is because every single person has it until it's healed. The reason I call that the most dangerous thought in the ego thought system is because if you believe that thought, you will be too afraid to look at how the ego is maintaining itself. You'll be too afraid to look to notice your sense of doership, for example, related to this quote. Because there will be a belief that if you catch yourself saying, I did this or I decided this, that means you are bad. And there's something in us that cannot bear to be bad. It cannot bear it. It's too afraid of destruction, I think. Too afraid of self-destruction. In fact, that's the way I experienced it. I did one time go all the way in and look at this thought. All the way in. Two nights in a row. There was a lot of fear related to this thought. And the first night, you know, laying on the bed in the fetal position, but just watching the fear and watching what it was saying and just watching, right? The first night I went all the way in till I came to this point in the mind, this belief. There was this belief that if I really did become fully, fully vulnerable to God, let go of all of my defenses that I used to try and protect myself, and I went to God, that God would point very distinctly at me and say, "Not you." Like everyone else was good enough to be accepted by God if they met, you know, if they met the requirements, if they became vulnerable, laid down their defenses, they could all pass by me, right? But not me. See, it's a very personal statement. Not you. But then the second night, as I started looking at it again, the fear arose naturally, and I just watched the fear. In a way, I didn't do this. It happened, right? It happened. But I did nothing to stop the fear. I just laid there in the fetal position. I even remember rocking back and forth. Rocking back and forth comforted me. But I wasn't trying to get out of the fear. I was just watching it. I was letting it be. I was watching where it was taking me. And that night, we went right past God. Because it turns out that the idea of God was also a defense mechanism. Because with the idea of God, with the idea of a God saying, "Not you," it was an other that I could still blame. I could blame God for not being forgiving. Blame God for not loving me. And so that was actually still a defense mechanism. So on the second night, I went right past that defense mechanism. And I got to a place where there was only self, not true self at this point. It was only ego self. And what I saw was this fear. I call it the worst fear ever. What I saw was this fear that if I could not hide that I am bad thought, which in this fear is not a thought, it's a fact. That's how this fear sees it. So I'll just word it that way. If I could not hide that I am bad fact from myself, if it ever came up so that I really had to look at it, that there would be so much self-hatred that I would have to devour myself, destroy myself. And again, not at the human level. At some divine but yet not true self levels. At some, I'll call it the divine ego or the big ego, the metaphysical ego. And the amazing thing is, what happened after I looked right at that fear, that if I ever, ever had to face the fact about me fully, that the I am bad fact, that I would have to devour myself because I couldn't take it. Right after that, something popped, something, I busted through something. Again, this all happened naturally. And I saw that could never, ever, 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 ever happen. I saw that love, well, love is what I am, but even as the belief in the ego self, even with the belief I am bad, love is still the core of what I am, and that love can never ever be overcome by that I am bad thought. that love is so much more powerful and so much more perfect, that there could never be that self-hatred that the ego feared. Because love is my core. Love is what I really am. It's not capable of that. And I think that's the moment when I saw that the I am bad thought is not true. It's not that I haven't seen it arise in my mind since then. I have seen it arise in my mind. It's just that it doesn't have that stickiness anymore. I don't believe it anymore. Even as I make, what one could call a major mistake. I listen to ego and lose my temper and get mad at someone. The way I see it now is I listened to ego for a few minutes, I lost my temper, I got mad at someone. I don't see it as I am bad. And not only that, you know how you know when something is really healed? Because I don't see anyone else as bad either. If I said, I don't see myself as bad, but that person over there, now that person's bad, that would just be denial and projection, right? But I don't see anybody as bad. I do see that we make mistakes. But I can see mistakes without that idea of guilt, that idea of bad. So again, what we're talking about, let me bring this back to my journal. I'm looking at quote number 535. The belief in I is the sole error to be released. I think. I choose, and I'm awakening. This I is the error. Watch it, notice it, see it. And what the I am bad discussion had to do with that was that belief I am bad is the obstacle to being able to just watch ourselves. It's the obstacle to being able to see how we reinforce the ego. So it's something else to be aware of. It's, something else to be honestly and sincerely aware of. Notice when the I am bad thought is making you too afraid to look at how you reinforce the ego. And if that's what you need to notice first, then notice it first, the I am bad thought. And then when the I am bad thought is not so strong, then start noticing, the other ways that you reinforce the ego. And again, what this particular quote is pointing to is noticing when I have that feeling of I'm doing it. And the quote, the original quote from Muru Ganar, talks about the ego pride. But you may not experience it as pride. You may experience it as shame, right? So, there is the doership that says, oh, I did this. I made awakening together the great thing that it is, right? There's that, and that would be pride. But there's also the doership of, oh, I did this. I got mad, and I yelled at him, and I made him feel bad. And that doership leads to the guilt, right? So, even though the quote is specifically talking about pride, it's not really pride we're watching for. It's that I do or I did. Right? That's what we're watching for. I do. I did. I decided. Right? I chose. Who is that I? What is that I? Is that really what I am? This is what needs to be looked at. Am I this person, Regina Dawn Akers? And that's it for 535. So if you're in the journal with me, you can scroll down and click on number 536 underneath the comment and reply area. I will read 536 from the Seven Steps to Awakening. Whether one is or one is not engaged in work, One gains the state of non-action only when the ego, with its proud delusion, I am the doer, has died and disappeared. So it's kind of like putting quotes 534 and 535 together, and it equals 536, because here we still have the connection between the ego and the I do thought, right? But we also see that non-action, true non-action, which would be the equivalent of awakening or self-realization, right? Complete non-action. That state is not realized until the ego has died and disappeared. So again, we're being told that not only can you transcend the ego, which is really what I feel like I'm kind of experiencing now, not full transcendence, but a lot. You know, if you look relative to how I used to be, gosh, a lot of transcendence has happened. I can even say I live, the majority of my life is a transcendent life, meaning I don't listen to the ego in most things. And I feel very honest in stating that. But I cannot say the ego is dead. And again, those who say the ego never dies, you know, this transcendent state is awakening, you know, that's for me, that's hogwash. The ego does die. It had a beginning, it has an end. My true self is egoless. Awake is egoless. Quote number 536 says, whether one is or is not engaged in work, one gains the state of non-action only when the ego, with its proud delusion, I am the doer, has died and disappeared. Died and disappeared. Not transcended. Non-existent. Let's see what I wrote in my journal for number 536. The ideas I think and I choose reinforce the belief in separate individual self. Surrendering the illusion of I think and I choose by noticing subtle intuition and proceeding from there weakens the ideas I think and I choose, and thereby weakens the sense of individual self. Now, of course, this is what I mentioned earlier. I mentioned that I think that strong sense of doership that I used to have, you know, like when I was a director at private healthcare systems, I think, you know, going from that strong sense of I do this, I make my team successful, to this sense now that I don't do anything, even though I'm very, very busy, that I don't really do anything, right? What really gets credit for that shift to me is my practice of the teachings of Inner Ramana. Because it's the practice of the teachings of Inner Ramana, the practice of surrender, the practice of asking within instead of deciding at the mental level, deciding for myself. The practice of asking within, what am I to say? What am I to do? How am I to see this? Even what am I to think? How am I to respond? That practice tuned me into that subtle intuition. And then somehow, once that subtle intuition was primary, instead of the thinking mind being primary, the sense of doership, it's not fully present. Since the ego is still here, I don't want to say it's not present, but it is much weaker. I just now remembered, it must be important because it came back into my mind, I just now remembered that earlier I talked about, you know, while I'm working, while I'm being with my family, while I'm doing anything, one thing that I'm doing that nobody can see is that I'm remembering my current lesson, whatever it is that I'm to be watching, whatever it is that I'm to be focusing on, I'm remembering it. And I told you all that maybe I would come back and tell you how I remember. Maybe I would describe that for you. And the thought just came into my mind to do that. So I guess it's something that is to be said. When I remember, it's not really mental. It's not really intellectual. It's not really thinking. When I remember my current lesson, whatever that is, I open to it. It's present in the mind, but I'm not thinking about it. It's present, and I open to it. I feel like, well, Laurent would probably use the example of a woman opening to a man, right? I remember him using that example. It's a sexual example, but maybe it's the best example there is a woman opening to the man that she loves. I feel like I'm opening to the lesson that I am to learn. I am allowing it to penetrate me. That's how I remember. Not thinking. Opening. And you can see how there's not even a sense of doership in that. It's not that I am, you know, making myself learn this lesson. I am making myself remember this. There's not that. I'm trusting that the lesson, that the grace that's behind the lesson can meet with the grace in me, the true self in me, and catalyze the lesson as learned. Like I don't have to do anything, but I do have to be open. I do have to be ready. Dove spoke this morning, at least as I heard it. After I got done commenting, he said he didn't say that, but I swore that he did. I think maybe the flow was just coming through him and he wasn't aware of what he said. But what I heard Dove say this morning was that it is our responsibility to ready ourselves for awakening, or it is our responsibility to focus on our spiritual aspiration. I would say it is my responsibility to be open always. And I can't be open and be focused on the mother role, be open and be focused on the awakening together work, be open and be focused on how to be Ron's girlfriend. I can't do both at the same time. So even though the body does those things, the mind and the heart, they're remembering the current lesson by being open and available for the penetration of that lesson. I do my best to live in what I would call a state of openness. So the grace can do to me. All right. We won't have time for this entire song, but we'll listen to it for a couple minutes.
Bring the sharks, bring them from the brightness, bring them from the dark. them all in, bring them all in, bring them all in, bring them all into my heart. Bring them all in, bring them all in, bring them all in, bring them all in, bring them all into my heart.
All right, and that's the end of my time. So I will be back in 2 hours. I'll be back in 2 hours to look at the daily contemplation with you. So hopefully I'll get to hear from you then. I love to be the listener when I'm the facilitator. All right. Good night, everyone. See you in a couple hours.